Hey there, you're listening to the Swings and Studies podcast with your host, Jordan Perez. This podcast is designed to give you the latest in college golf in the form of interviews, analysis, the occasional hot take, and some good old commentary. If you want to keep up for more content, follow Swings and Studies on Twitter, at Swings Studies. That's at Swings Studies. Enjoy the episode. Hello, 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 hello. Welcome to another episode of the Swings and Studies podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Perez. I'm back for some me and you time. That means I'm here for a solo podcast, no interviews. I know it's been a while, but I wanted to kind of come on and just give you guys a bit of an overview for the spring because events are already starting and I feel like it would be kind of strange for me to just throw up a bunch of interviews without just throwing up a solo podcast of my thoughts and expectations and how I feel about the spring. I'm so excited. I've said it ad nauseum. I've expressed it a million times on the Twitter account, on the previous episodes, everything. And so far, things seem to be playing out okay. I think it might be a little bit too early to tell, but since most teams aren't competing just yet, but we had a conference that came back in a major way, and that was the ACC. The ACC came back and played the Camp Creek Invitational hosted by FSU, and it made a pretty profound statement, if I do say so myself. I was kind of not shocked by the results of the tournament. FSU pulled it out in a really sweet way, but more so shocked at the performances by the particular teams outside of FSU. So we'll run it back a little bit. There was a pretty crazy playoff finish between FSU and Wake Forest, but Clemson came through okay, especially in the first round. Clemson's Jacob Bridgman, he ended up being the individual winner for the entire tournament. From the get-go, he dominated. Finished 15 under for the entire tournament and set a school record in his opening round of 64, followed up with a second round 66, and cruised in the third with a 71. Clemson ended up coming in third, but I mean, on the real, they kicked some butt, and I did not expect that from them because really, who did? not to say that Clemson was a team that I had very low expectations for or anything. I definitely think they've been a decent program. I just didn't expect them to really put themselves that far ahead in the ACC, especially after such a long pause from competition. Junior Turk Petit was a little bit absent in their first two rounds, but he showed up big in the third with a 67. I look back and I know that I severely underestimated them. They shined, posted the lowest tournament team score and tournament wide, even beating FSU in terms of tournament team score with a 276 in their very first round. So after that first round dropped, after that leaderboard dropped, I was shook, but it was a very cool thing to see. Then Wake Forest came in, stole their thunder, courtesy of Michael Brennan and Alex Fitzpatrick with some rounds in the 60s. And Clemson slipped up big in the second round, but Wake Forest came through and took the lead. At this point, FSU's also starting to kind of sneak in. Three out of their five starters for Camp Creek had never competed for Florida State before the tournament. So it was pretty shocking, and it's definitely a testament to their recruiting that they were able to pull off such a clutch win. So by the second round, FSU was on Wake Forest's heels with one stroke behind, but the charge isn't led by who you think, Mr. John Pack. Nope. The lowest scores for the second round came from Connor Futrell and Vincent Norman. Round three comes along. Futrell ends up leading the team individually with a 7-under score, and then John Pack and Brett Roberts back him up with some pretty low scores in the third as well. Wake Forest is still alive at this point. Mark Power, Parker Gillum, and Michael Brennan are still keeping things at pace, and then they end up tying at 22 under. So end up taking it to two playoff holes, and FSU wins and takes the title at their own, not home tournament, because this one was in Panama City Beach, but this was an FSU-hosted event, so shout out to the Noles, they're back, the ACC is back, and I'm so excited for ACC men's golf to be here and to see how it's going to influence not only Wagger, because I think John Pack's a little bit underrated in Wagger, but PGA Tour University, because he stayed right at the top of those rankings even without team competition. So it'll be interesting to see how that pans out and if he can keep his number one spot on the PGA Tour U leaderboard. And let's kind of segue in that direction. I was kind of thinking about this in terms of regionality, and this is kind of been broken in a way, because I think the SEC kind of committed itself to staying within a certain region of playing tournaments, but they're still going to the Natties in Arizona, and there's an Iowa State event in Naples, so I don't know. There's a lot of, like, cross competition between the conferences, and I know they're not really trying to play out west, but they're ultimately going to, so I think the conference mixing is going to happen regardless. But is sticking to regional tournaments going to help or hurt teams? Because I think there's still a debate of, obviously, like, program finances and everything. I think there's enough strength in a lot of specifically Power Fives to really give a balanced look at how teams are going to look this spring. You know, it's going to come down to a lot of things. You know, how well is your communication, how well were the individual practices, competition, etc., going to translate in team play. So that's just some food for thought. I think there's enough talent to really showcase, but again, you know, COVID's still around, they're following protocol and being tested. You know, we might see some empty lineups. Hopefully there are a minimal amount of cases, but COVID is so ever present, you know, it's really tough to say. A lot of universities are still trying to return to somewhat of an SOP. I know for my alma mater, Florida, there's a little rule where if students take a test, they can be cleared, but they don't require a negative test to go to classes, and obviously college bars throughout the country is still open. It's just still a really communal thing, and I hope that teams and players are still cognizant of what's at stake and know that it's such a privilege to be playing team golf again this spring. So I'm gonna move on from that. I'm not gonna do a full-blown power ranking. There's plenty of rankings that have come out for the spring. I just don't think it's necessary, because I think it's a little bit redundant. I mean, if you guys really want my take on, like, a top 15, top 20 for teams or players, just let me know and I can do something like that. I honestly do think it's a little redundant. I'd rather kind of point out some teams that I think are going to be teams to watch that might not be super high on your radar right now as a team specifically, not just the players. I think that is a little more helpful, but if you guys want me to do a full-blown power ranking, please let me know. Also, before I go off on a complete tangent, please let me know if you guys like the episode lengths. I'm kind of varying through, like, the 20-30 minute area. Who knows how bit long this one will be if I'm rambling. The solo ones are usually a lot shorter than my interviews, but let me know if you guys like the episode lengths right now, if you like them to be a little bit shorter, a little bit longer. I don't know. I really like to keep that some of that stuff in mind as I'm preparing for interviews, preparing the solo episodes, so just let me know. But anyway, I'm going to move on and point out three different teams on the men's and women's side for college golf that you guys should really, really pay attention to. I think all of these teams have a lot of upward potential. These are not number one teams. I mean, some of them are ranked among top 10s, but I think these aren't teams that I think you guys think will pop off necessarily, but here we go. So first, I'll start on the men's side. I think Cole Hammer's got his groove back for Texas men's golf. He finally clutched out a win at the South Beach International Amateur right at the end of the year in 2020. And I think a win like that, that was really hard fought against some of the best juniors and some of the best amateurs in the country, proved that he has a lot of momentum left. And I think Texas really needs to work on their match play from there. I don't think they had the best showings at Eastlake and the Big 12 match play, but if they can really fix that up, I think they can show up big in the postseason. You still got the Cootie brothers on the team who are still super magical. So I think Texas should stay on your radar and don't sleep. Do not sleep. So we've got the University of Alabama at Birmingham. They've been grinding, okay? They're pretty slept on. I know they're pretty low-key, and they've been climbing up the ranks. I think they hit number 5, which was their highest ranking in school history. But I think they're going to do a lot better than people to expect, even though the strength of their schedule is not, ooh, top-tier SEC or ACC events. Like, no, you don't need that, okay? They're doing great. They had 3 back-to-back wins in their fall, which meant literally every event they competed in, they won. Should they be in another conference? Maybe they should. We don't know. The point is, they're at the top of their game. I think Nick Robillard's going to fly up the Wagger. William Walker had a big win at the Willow Cup, and I think they're going to set themselves up well for a mid-February start. It's a little bit later than a lot of men's teams, but I ultimately think they're going to show up pretty big. And for my last men's team, the Arizona Wildcats. If you're asleep, wake up, because they just competed this past weekend at the Copper Cup, and Trevor Werbelow is not a one-man show, okay? They lost to Arizona State by slim margin, and it really wasn't Trevor Werbelow who kept them afloat, to be honest. They've got some really big veteran talent with Christian Bank and Briggs Deuce. They made the Wildcats a pretty hard team to beat in match play. If that Pac-12 team can really shake the rust off from having not competed in team golf, because Trevor Werbelow kept himself pretty busy in the fall, you can think back to the College Golf Showcase and other events, I think they're really going to climb up the rankings come stroke play tournament time. I still haven't seen their schedule come out. I mean, they're pretty sure they're very much so slated to compete, but I haven't seen a full schedule out from Arizona, so hoping that shows up sometime soon. So let's move on to the women's side. Women's, as typical, is usually competing a little bit later in the spring, but nonetheless, there's still a lot of excitement on that side, and I've got 3 teams that I think are going to make a really big statement. So the first one from the SEC is Arkansas. Arkansas had an incredible start to their fall with a big home win at the Blessings for a first-time tournament and home field advantage, of course. That was awesome, you know, right coming right off of COVID summer. But they kind of fell off a little bit, I won't lie. They fell off a little bit as the fall continued. Even so, Brooke Matthews had a win, a top 5, and a top 15 throughout the rest of Arkansas's fall campaign. I think she's got a relatively young team behind her who I think with a lot more experience can really prove to be supplemental for her in their quest through the SEC, especially come postseason time. So I'm interested to see the dynamic and how they've built throughout the fall. And fall is such a slim schedule and a very small sample size. So, you know, this is real crunch time. And I think it's going to really paint the true picture of just how strong this Arkansas team is. Moving on, Southern California. Let me just name a couple of names that should be circulating your mind if you're paying attention to amateur golf. Gabby Ruffles, Amelia Garvey, Allison Corpus, Alia Abdugani. I'm sorry, do I need to continue? Southern California is so star-studded. All these players. Sands Team Golf kept themselves so busy throughout the fall. Okay, Pac-12 had no golf, as we all know. Even without that, they were playing in the U.S. Amateur. We had a North and South Amateur finalist. Arnold Palmer Cup appearances. Some professional events, maybe, huh? put a team like this together, and I think it's going to be really scary. Again, been a while since they've competed, but wow, individually they have been keeping themselves busy, have been staying competitive, has been staying strong, have not, I don't think they've missed a beat, and I think they're all going to have a really great spring season. So I'm really excited to see Southern California come back. And for my final team, I think this is a team that a lot of people don't really have on their radar, but I think you should. Texas Tech. It might come as a surprise, but just hear me out. I think they had a much better than expected fall. Sophia Garcia is back on an upward trajectory. She was ranked pretty highly a while back, but she's coming off of some two top fives in the fall. Sophomore Anna Dong, and just mostly their young talent is pretty good, and they've got a lot of potential. Anna specifically had a really solid fall, and she never finished worse than in the top 30. The Big 12 is always super competitive, you know, with Texas and Baylor, big teams like that, but, you know, I think they've got the potential to navigate through it and really prove themselves as, you know, I don't see them winning the taking it all in the Big 12, but I see them showing up and saying, hey, like, we're not to be messed with. We are a pretty strong Big 12 team. They've got a pretty lengthy and stacked schedule, so I think that's going to allow them to show off that they've got some strength within the team themselves. But thank you for listening for this week. I'm so excited to have kind of given somewhat of a spring preview and my thoughts on what the spring's gonna look like. I think it's gonna be a good time. Next week we've got College Golf on TV with the Southwestern Invitational, so that's gonna be very exciting. That's hosted by Pepperdine, and yeah, that's number one Pepperdine, by the way. Lest we forget. Thanks for listening. I'm so excited. Again, how many times I could say it, take a shot every time I say I'm excited for college golf. I don't want to know what's going to happen to you, but I'm kidding. Please don't, because I've said it a lot, and that wouldn't be okay. But yeah, I think that'll conclude this episode for this week. Thanks so much for listening. And yeah, take care. Have a great week, everybody. Remember, college golf is back, so do a little dance, make a little noise, get down tonight. No? Okay, that's just me. Okay. All right. I don't want to make this ending any more awkward than it is going to be. So have a great rest of your week, and see you guys next week.